Knowledge is power. Guard it well. In the grim darkness of the far future, these words are more than just a motto. For the Blood Ravens, they are a way of life. The Blood Ravens are a loyalist Space Marine chapter shrouded in mystery, defined by an insatiable thirst for knowledge and an enigmatic origin. They have fought fiercely in the Emperor's name on countless battlefields, earning both glory and suspicion in equal measure. Whispers across the Imperium speak of dark secrets entwined in their past, perhaps dating back to the Horus Heresy itself. Yet, despite the questions surrounding them, the Blood Ravens endure as stalwart defenders of humanity, relentless, studious, and just a little bit notorious. This monologue will delve into everything about the Blood Ravens, their history, their unusual culture of scholarship, their famous and infamous campaigns, the controversies that dog them, and the tantalizing theories about their true heritage. It's a tale of heroism and heresy, of lost planets and forbidden lore, all told with a subtle touch of sarcasm. Prepare to uncover the saga of the Blood Ravens chapter, The Seekers of Knowledge, The Crows of the Battlefield, and perhaps the biggest mystery in the 41st millennium. Origins, Shrouded in Mystery. The Blood Ravens' story begins in obscurity. Unlike most Space Marine chapters, who proudly trace their gene lineage to one of the Emperor's Primarch sons, the Blood Ravens have no idea who their progenitor is. Their earliest chapter records only date back to the early 37th millennium, abruptly appearing without any mention of a founding or a Primarch. In other words, they more or less popped into Imperial history out of nowhere, an alarming fact that has caused no small amount of chin-scratching in the halls of the Administratum. To the Blood Ravens themselves, this missing past is a source of burning curiosity, and maybe a few sleepless nights in the Librarium. They know that somewhere, sometime, something or someone wiped out all evidence of their creation. All they have are rumors and whispers, and oh, do those whispers hint at a scandal. Some say the truth of the Blood Raven's origin is hidden in the shadows of the Horus Heresy, that cataclysmic civil war from 10,000 years ago. A dark truth, as more dramatic inquisitorial reports might put it. Perhaps a group of Astartes survived a long-forgotten massacre or betrayal and were reforged into a new chapter with new identities. Perhaps their gene seed comes from a lineage nobody in the present Imperium would ever openly admit. The Blood Ravens themselves certainly suspect something is amiss. After all, chapters don't just lose their founding records for no reason. In the absence of a known Primarch to honor, the Blood Ravens have directed their reverence solely to the Emperor and to the idea of knowledge itself. If you ask a Blood Raven who their spiritual father is, the answer you'll get is a resolute, "The Emperor of Mankind," and possibly a lecturing quote about the pursuit of wisdom if they really get going. This gap in their history has forged the chapter's identity. The Blood Ravens are born seekers, hungry to fill the void in their chronicle. Each battle brother is instilled with a duty not just to fight, but to investigate, to uncover secrets, whether those be the enemy's battle plans or clues to the chapter's own past. They maintain that only by understanding the truth can they truly guard the Imperium. Of course, such relentless curiosity in a universe full of forbidden lore can be a double-edged sword, but more on that later. Suffice it to say, the Blood Ravens started life as orphans in the Imperium's sprawling family of Space Marines, and they've been searching for their lost heritage ever since. The Great Father and the Librarian Tradition. Every legend needs a founder hero, and for the Blood Ravens that figure is Azariah Vidya, known reverently as the Great Father. Vidya appears in the chapter's earliest tales, not quite a Primarch, but the next best thing. a savior who molded the chapter in its formative years. According to chapter lore, half history, half legend, the young blood ravens faced a grave trial not long after they emerged in the galaxy. In a brutal campaign against a chaos rebellion in the Gothic sector, the chapter's leadership was decimated. Their chapter master, Master of Sanctity, and most of the veteran First Company were wiped out in one fell swoop. Things were looking, to put it mildly, dire. Enter Chief Librarian Azariah Vidya. This Space Marine Psyker stepped up and took command of the embattled Blood Ravens. Now, librarians in Space Marine chapters are usually advisors and sorcerer warriors, not the guys calling the shots. But Vidya was no ordinary bookish librarian. He was shrewd, courageous, and perhaps a touch obsessed with arcane insight. A perfect fit for the Blood Ravens then and now. Facing the chaos onslaught, Vidya didn't just charge in bolter first. Instead, he turned to what he knew best. Knowledge. He studied the enemy's tactics, scoured every scrap of data on their movements, and even dispatched scouts and psykers to probe for hidden weaknesses. For months, Vidya treated war like a puzzle to be solved, every skirmish a clue, every enemy feint a piece of the grand picture. When Vidya finally struck back, he did so with surgical precision. The Blood Ravens launched calculated assaults on seemingly random, quiet locations, which turned out to be linchpins of the chaos war effort. Traitor strongholds went up in flames one after another, surprised by Space Marines who somehow knew exactly where to hit them. The campaign ended in a decisive Imperial victory. The foe, revealed to be the Trixie Alpha Legion, no less, was utterly foiled. If the Raven Guard Legion had their Deliverance Lost saga, and the Ultramarines had their Battle of Kalth, well, the Blood Ravens had just earned their own heroic chapter in the history books. In the aftermath, the grateful and likely somewhat astonished Blood Ravens asked Vidya to officially become their chapter master. The tale goes that the so-called secret masters of the chapter, an inner council of the wise, recognized that Vidya's blend of brains and bravery was exactly what the chapter needed. Thus, Azariah Vidya became chapter master while still keeping his position as chief librarian, a dual role that set a lasting precedent. From that day on, the Blood Ravens have never been shy about letting their librarians lead from the front. In this chapter, the nerds with the glowing eyes and magic hands can be in charge, thank you very much. Vidya's legacy shaped the chapter's culture deeply. By elevating a librarian to the highest office, the Blood Ravens signaled that knowledge and psychic foresight would guide their future. Indeed, many Blood Raven officers since have been librarians or scholar warriors of some stripe. Of course, handing the keys of power to the brainy psykers does sometimes backfire spectacularly. Again, more on that later. But at the time, it must have seemed like a brilliant idea. Azariah Vidya passed into legend, earning the title of Great Father because, in a sense, he filled the void of the unknown Primarch in their hearts. When a chapter doesn't know its sire, it finds its own heroes to idolize. Not all early Blood Raven history was triumphant, however. There's a certain dark anecdote the chapter doesn't like to talk about, one that perhaps foreshadows the temptations that come with their endless quest for knowledge. Sometime in the late 38th millennium, the entirety of the Blood Raven's 5th Company vanished. Officially, Imperial records say they were lost to the warp during a routine patrol. Unofficially, rumors suggest a far more sinister story, that a librarian within the 5th Company fell under the sway of the ruinous powers and turned his fellow Astartes to chaos. If it's true, that would make the whole company renegades. A shameful possibility indeed. The Blood Ravens, true to form, have scrubbed the details from record and dismissed the tale as unfounded. Yet interestingly, to this day, the Marines of the reconstituted 5th Company wear badges of penitence and redemption on their armor, as if atoning for some ancient sin. Draw your own conclusions. The rise of Azariah Vidya and the whispered fall of the 5th Company both illustrate a constant theme for the Blood Ravens. Knowledge is their weapon, but also their temptation. In their formative centuries, they learned that prying into the unknown yields great rewards and great risks. They had won a miraculous victory through intellect and psychic talent, and perhaps also had a brush with damnation when one of their own sought forbidden lore. This precarious dance with insight and heresy would continue to define the chapter in the millennia to come. Seekers of knowledge, culture, and practices. If there's one thing everyone knows about the Blood Ravens, aside from their striking red power armor and big black raven emblems, it's that they are the bookworms of the Adeptus Astartes. This is a chapter of Space Marines that would happily raid a Chaos Temple and a library in the same day and treat both with equal seriousness. The Blood Ravens have a well-earned reputation for scholarship. They maintain some of the most extensive librariums in the entire Imperium, packed with tomes, data slates, and forbidden lore that other chapters might torch on sight. Every battle barge and strike cruiser in their fleet carries its own librarium and a staff of archivists. These guys document everything. One might say the Blood Ravens are practically addicted to record-keeping, which makes it all the more ironic that someone deleted the first few chapters of their own story. Being seekers of knowledge isn't just a fun quirk. It's woven into their military doctrine. The Blood Ravens favor careful planning, reconnaissance, and above all, understanding the enemy. They are the types to analyze Xenos technology or study Chaos cult practices if it gives an edge in war. Their librarians, and they have a lot of librarians, frequently guide battle plans with psychic visions or by deciphering intel that others overlooked. The chapter's penchant for predicting enemy moves and striking with uncanny precision is legendary. Allies might see it as tactical genius, while some more superstitious folks wonder if the Blood Ravens are peeking at the Emperor's tarot a bit too closely, or perhaps making deals with dubious powers. The nerve. The chapter's obsession with uncovering secrets has led them to form unusually close ties with the Adeptus Mechanicus and even certain members of the Inquisition. It's not uncommon to find Blood Ravens accompanying Mechanicus Explorator fleets into forgotten ruins, or helping Ordo Xenos agents dig up some lost Archaeotech weapon. Whereas some chapters, looking at you, Space Wolves, would smash a relic and ask questions never, the Blood Ravens would prefer to secure it, study it, and maybe stash it at it in their vault for safekeeping. Knowledge is power, and the Blood Ravens take that very literally. If something is unknown, they want to know it. If something is lost, they want to find it. And if something is hidden, Emperor help us all, they will uncover it eventually. This brings us to a slightly less flattering aspect of their reputation. There's a running joke in certain circles that if you can't find a relic or sacred item where you left it, the Blood Ravens probably borrowed it. Yes, the Blood Ravens have a bit of a magpie streak. Over the centuries, they've accumulated a trove of artifacts, weapons, and heirlooms, some of which originated in the armories of other chapters or the shrines of the Ecclesiarchy. Officially, the Blood Ravens claim these acquisitions are all above board, trophies won in battle or gifts exchanged in camaraderie. Unofficially, the Blood Angels were quite puzzled when told they had gifted a priceless bolt pistol to the Blood Ravens, considering the Blood Angels had no recollection of that transaction. Awkward. One notorious example is the so-called Pistol of Baal, a master-crafted bolt pistol emblazoned with the blood drop symbol of the Blood Angels. Blood Ravens records insist it was obtained in a ceremonial exchange of arms with the Blood Angels back in the 37th millennium. However, the Blood Angel's own archives are silent about any such exchange, which is a polite way of saying the angels were probably robbed blind, or someone in the Raven's Librarius fabricated a story to cover a little five-finger discount, whether by opportunistic battlefield scavenging or creative bookkeeping. The Blood Ravens have amassed quite the eclectic collection of war gear. This habit has earned them nicknames ranging from the Crows to outright thieves, though perhaps said in jest, mostly. In their defense, one could argue they only take things to protect humanity. After all, who better to safeguard a dangerous relic than a chapter obsessed with guarding knowledge? Exactly. Case closed, thank you very much, says the Blood Raven. Another point of contention is the Blood Raven's reliance on psykers. They recruit and cultivate far more psychic space marines than normal. Where a typical chapter might have one librarian per company at most, the Blood Ravens might field several, and even many non-librarian officers have an academic or mystical bent. To more traditional minds, like those of the Black Templars, who absolutely loathe witches in power armor, this is borderline heretical. The Black Templars, in fact, have come to blows with the Blood Ravens at least once. There was an incident when an overzealous Black Templar's fleet found a Blood Raven's ship commanded by a librarian and decided to pick a fight, exchanging a few broadsides in space. The Blood Ravens later crafted a new Power Fist relic called Gauntlet of the Templar to commemorate the occasion. A cheeky little dig, implying they literally slapped a Black Templar and made a keepsake out of it. Relations between those two chapters remain frosty. Cultural differences aside, the Blood Ravens are respected for their earnest service to the Imperium. They might be oddballs with their bookish ways and their tendency to claim finders keepers on holy artifacts. But when the bell tolls for war, they fight as fiercely as any chapter. Their battle cry, "Knowledge is power, guard it well," rings out as a warning to the enemies of man. These space marines come armed not just with bolters and chainswords, but with insight and cunning. And if the enemy happens to drop a shiny relic when they die, well, the Blood Ravens will guard that well too, in their vault forever. It's also worth noting that the Blood Ravens became a fleet-based chapter out of necessity. For much of their history, they did have a homeworld, a planet named Aurelia in the Corianus sector. But disaster struck in late M40. Aurelia, a bustling hive world and proud chapter domain, was consumed by a warp storm under horrifying circumstances. A greater demon, specifically a Nurgle plague daemon called Ulkair, was inadvertently unleashed on Aurelia. The then chapter master, alongside chief librarian Azariah Kairas, managed to banish or contain the demon, but not without cost. The entire planet of Aurelia was pulled into the warp and disappeared. Imagine the paperwork on that one. Homeworld missing, presumed in hell. With Aurelia lost, the Blood Ravens had no choice but to operate as a completely fleet-based chapter. They turned their massive battle barge Omnis Arcanum into a mobile fortress monastery, complete with the Grand Librarium Sanctorum, housing all those precious books and records. Losing Aurelia was a body blow to the chapter, but in classic Blood Raven fashion, they documented the heck out of it and learned what lessons they could. It also made them fiercely protective of their remaining recruiting worlds in the Aurelia subsector, planets like Calderas, Typhon, and Meridian. In time, as warp storms are fickle, Aurelia actually reemerged from the warp in M41, though it returned as a corrupted, demon-infested shadow of its former self. The Blood Ravens now keep constant watch over what's left of their old homeworld, in cooperation with the Inquisition, to ensure the evils bound there never spread. Home for the Blood Ravens today is wherever their fleet sails. They are wanderers by fate, which conveniently aligns with their questing nature. have Starship, will travel, and while they're in orbit, they'll be sure to raid your planet's archive for any juicy lore, strictly for safekeeping, of course. By the end of the 41st millennium, on the eve of the era Indomitus, the Blood Ravens had honed their identity. Clever, secretive, somewhat mistrusted, but undeniably effective. They value lore and foresight as much as bolter discipline. They will ally with unusual partners, even Eldar on rare occasions, if it means gaining insight into an enemy. They will risk censure to obtain a weapon or piece of knowledge that might turn the tide. And they will never stop hunting for clues about their own inception. This is the character of the Blood Ravens, perhaps the closest thing to true scholar warriors you'll find among the Adeptus Astartes, though not without a few skeletons in their metaphorical closet, and possibly literal closets, stuffed with other chapters' missing heirlooms. Gabriel Angelos and the Tartarus Campaign. No account of the Blood Ravens would be complete without spotlighting some of their most famous and infamous exploits. One name that stands out in the chapter's recent history is Gabriel Angelos. If Azaria Vidya was the great father who shaped the chapter's soul, Gabriel Angelos is the champion who carried that soul through its darkest trials. Stern, resolute, and carrying a giant thunderhammer, for when talk isn't enough, Gabriel has become the modern face of the Blood Ravens. Our story picks up in the late 41st millennium, not long after the loss of Aurelia. Gabriel was then captain of the Blood Ravens' third company, charged with defending the chapter's recruiting worlds. Hailing originally from the planet Cyrene, a once loyal world in subsector Aurelia, Gabriel earned a reputation as a bold leader. That reputation was cemented and tested by the fate of Cyrene itself. Shortly before the events we're about to recount, Captain Angelos discovered that his homeworld had fallen prey to a massive chaos corruption. With a heavy heart, he requested an exterminatus on Cyrene, calling in the Inquisition to purge the planet in fire rather than allow a chaos infection to spread. It was a drastic decision that saved countless other worlds, but it haunted Gabriel greatly. He had effectively condemned his own people to extinction for the Emperor's sake. Barely had the ashes of Cyrene cooled when Gabriel and the Third Company were redeployed to another crisis. The planet Tartarus, under assault by a massive orc, what seemed like a straightforward greenskin stomping operation soon turned into something far more complex and sinister, as is often the case when the Blood Ravens show up. Trouble tends to arrive in layers. Tartarus hid a dark secret, while Gabriel's space marines fought the rampaging orcs led by war boss Orcamungus. They discovered signs of a chaos plot unfolding in parallel. An Alpha Legion warband led by a wicked chaos sorcerer named Sindri Meyer and his brute of a chaos lord Bale had come to Tartarus in search of a powerful chaos artifact known as the Maledictum. Eldar from Craftworld Bieltan were also on world, covertly trying to contain the same threat. Inquisitor Mordecai Toth of the Ordo Malleus, who accompanied the Blood Ravens, warned Angelos that something on Tartarus was very amiss. Over the course of the Tartarus campaign, the Blood Ravens battled orcs and clashed with the elusive Eldar, all while piecing together the truth. The orc invasion had been a distraction orchestrated by the Alpha Legion, and the Eldar were trying, in their typical aloof way, to prevent the Maledictum from being claimed. Gabriel's instincts that something more was at play proved correct, but at a high price. In the final stages of the campaign, tragedy struck from within. Librarian Isidore Akios, Gabriel's longtime friend and trusted comrade, and a fellow survivor of Cyrene's demise, succumbed to the temptation of chaos. Lured by whispers of power from the Maledictum, Isidore betrayed the Blood Ravens. He stole the key to the artifact, intending to use its dark power for what he foolishly believed could be a greater good, or perhaps simply for his own ambition. Gabriel was forced to confront Isidore in a brutal one-on-one duel. In a heartbreaking clash between brothers, Gabriel defeated and executed the corrupted librarian. With Isidore's last breath, whatever spell of delusion he'd been under broke. He died begging Gabriel's forgiveness. But the damage was done. Chaos Sorcerer. Sindri seized the moment, snatching the Maledictum and using it to ascend to demonhood right then and there. A towering demon empowered by all the bloodshed on Tartarus erupted forth, and the final battle was on. Mustering his faith and fury, Gabriel Angelos faced the daemon. Armed with God Splitter, a consecrated thunder hammer gifted to him by Inquisitor Toth, Gabriel did the unthinkable. He smashed the Maledictum itself into shards. This destroyed the artifact and robbed the demon of its anchor to the mortal world. The enraged creature was weakened enough for Gabriel to banish it back to the warp, but not without consequence. The death of the Maledictum unleashed a catastrophic warp storm across Tartarus. Reality itself began to unravel on the planet. Realizing Tartarus was a lost cause, Gabriel ordered an immediate evacuation. The Blood Ravens rescued whom they could, which, alas, was only a tiny fraction of the planet's populace. Most had either been slaughtered by orcs or consumed by the spreading chaos madness. In the nick of time, Angelos and his remaining men escaped aboard the strike cruiser, Ravenous Spirit. Moments later, Tartarus was swallowed by warp energies. The entire planet was condemned to damnation, its surface transformed into a demon-haunted ruin by the storm unleashed from the Maledictum. The Tartarus campaign ended in what can only be described as a Pyrrhic victory. The Blood Ravens stopped the Alpha Legion's plans and prevented a greater demon from roaming free. A win for the Imperium, to be sure. But they lost untold brothers in the conflict, including a treasured librarian to corruption. An entire world was effectively sacrificed to contain chaos. Gabriel Angelos emerged victorious, but heavily scarred by guilt. He had done what was necessary, but like on Cyrene, the cost in innocent lives and loyal blood was staggering. In the aftermath, Gabriel had Isidore's name struck from the chapter's rolls, entered into the Librarium's Book of the Lost, a record of shame, and personally delivered a detailed report to the Inquisition about what had transpired. Some say that after Tartarus, Gabriel undertook a self-imposed exile or penitent crusade to atone for these events, battling the enemies of mankind in distant regions to put his demons to rest. Whatever the case, his legend only grew, and fate was not done with Gabriel Angelos or the Blood Ravens yet. The Cronus Campaign, Secrets and Sacrifice. Around the same era, another Blood Ravens campaign unfolded on the planet Cronus, a conflict remembered as the Dark Crusade. Captain Davian Thule, commanding the Fourth Company, led the chapter's intervention on Cronus. The planet had fallen into anarchy with multiple forces vying for control, an Imperial Guard regiment, Tau colonists, Orc warbands, Eldar raiders, and an awakening Necron presence beneath the surface, all locked in a free-for-all war. The Blood Ravens did not enter this fray on a whim. They had uncovered evidence that Cronus harbored artifacts from their unknown past. Ancient Blood Raven symbols and structures were found in Cronus's northern polar region, the North Vandia ice deserts, suggesting that perhaps long ago, some ancestors of the chapter had been there. For the knowledge-hungry Blood Ravens, this was an irresistible call. Thule's forces deployed to Cronus and quickly found themselves fighting on multiple fronts. To secure the planet and those relics, The Blood Ravens had to neutralize everyone else. This led to some extremely controversial actions. Notably, they assaulted the Imperial Guard garrison of Cronus, led by General Lucas Alexander. The Guard, who were trying to hold the planet for the Imperium, had been ordered by Segmentum Command to consider the Blood Ravens' intervention unauthorized. It was a tragic misunderstanding. Ultimately, Thule's Space Marines overran the Guard fortresses. Governor Militant Alexander was defeated, though notably spared. Thule had respect for the man's valor, even if duty put them at odds. Still, one can imagine how it looks in the reports. Space Marines killing soldiers of the Emperor. The Inquisition certainly took that seriously when they got wind of it. Meanwhile, the Blood Ravens also confronted the Necron threat on Cronus. In the planet's barren Thur Abyss plateau, Necron tombs were stirring. Captain Thule led a daring assault to shut down the Necron emergence, eventually planting a tectonic bomb to collapse the main Necron catacombs. The plan worked. The living metal abominations were buried, at least for a time, beneath tons of rock. With the Necrons quelled and the Imperial Guard subdued, the Blood Ravens effectively secured Cronus for themselves by process of elimination. The Tau, Eldar, and Orcs were also defeated one by one in the broader campaign's progression. However, instead of celebrating victory on Cronus, Captain Thule left the planet with a brooding spirit. The relics he uncovered there, whatever knowledge they held, seemed to shake him deeply. According to murmured chapter lore, Thule found records or artifacts in the ruins of an ancient Blood Ravens outpost on Cronus that hinted at the chapter's true origins. Exactly what he learned is known only to Thule and perhaps the chapter's highest librarians. But it's said that upon reviewing the secrets of Cronus, Thule decided to destroy all the artifacts and data rather than preserve them. Shortly after the campaign, he requested to be relieved from any command beyond his company, avoiding the spotlight or any promotion, which might have been forthcoming given his battlefield success. Many within the chapter suspect Thule discovered a connection to a traitor legion in their lineage. A truth so alarming he felt it had to be purged to protect the chapter. Indeed, whispers about the Thousand Sons, the fallen legion of Magnus the Red, began to circulate in the Blood Ravens and Librarius after Cronus, though always in hushed tones. The official outcome of Cronus was that the Blood Ravens had saved a world from Xenos occupation and brought it back under Imperial control. But the cost was the stain of fratricide, killing those guardsmen, and the burden of hidden knowledge gained and lost. Inquisitor Mordecai Toth, the same who was on Tartarus, questioned Thule extensively about Cronus, and ultimately decided not to level charges of heresy against the Blood Ravens, ruling that the confusion of war and the stakes at hand mitigated their actions. Still, the Cronus campaign left a mark on the chapter's reputation and psyche. They won, but the victory felt hollow. As Davian Thule departed Cronus, he carried with him unanswered questions about the Blood Ravens' past, questions that, for the time being, he chose to bury. It was an uneasy triumph, one that only added to the chapter's mystique, and to that ever-growing internal file labeled Who Are We Really? Disaster at Kaurava. The Price of Hubris. If Cronus was a challenging victory, the next major chapter in Blood Raven's history was a full-blown catastrophe. The Kaurava campaign is remembered, infamously, for the sheer scale of Blood Raven losses. Brother Captain Indrik Boreal took command of an unprecedented task force, 5 companies of Blood Ravens, half the chapter, to quell the Kaurava system, which had erupted into a massive conflict similar to Cronus with many armies battling for supremacy. The decision to commit such a large portion of the chapter reflected either extreme confidence or extreme desperation, perhaps a bit of both. Borealis' strategy relied on a tactic he codenamed Steel Rain, involving heavy use of drop pods to deploy his forces aggressively and en masse. Unfortunately, on the plains and jungles of Kaurava, Steel Rain turned into a bloodbath. Faced with multiple entrenched enemies, including the crafty Tau, who countered the drops effectively, and chaos forces that exploited the Raven's spread deployment, Boreal's companies were picked apart one by one. It was a perfect storm of tactical missteps and misfortune. Inadequate reconnaissance, underestimating the coordination of their foes, and perhaps a touch of arrogance thinking five companies of Astartes were invincible. The outcome was beyond grim. One after another, whole units of Blood Ravens were annihilated. Boreale himself was slain in combat. Reports differ on whether it was a Necron that struck him down, or a concerted assault by the Kaurava PDF and Sisters of Battle during one engagement. Either way, he died valiantly, but surrounded. By the end, five Blood Ravens companies had been effectively destroyed. The chapter's fighting strength was cut in half in a matter of weeks. It was one of the worst single campaign losses for any Space Marine chapter in the post-heresy era. The shock to the Blood Ravens was profound. Veterans back on the fleet could scarcely believe the casualty reports. Half of their brotherhood was just gone. In the aftermath, the chapter went into a period of semi-seclusion, pulling back to secure their remaining assets and prevent any opportunistic enemies from exploiting their weakness. Recruiting efforts were tripled on all their known worlds. Every neophyte who showed promise was rushed into the scout company to begin replenishing the ranks. But quality takes time, centuries really, to rebuild losses of that magnitude. The Kaurava disaster also earned the Blood Ravens some unwanted notoriety among other Imperial commanders. The chapter that prided itself on prescient knowledge and careful strategy had overcommitted and been badly beaten. Whispers in high command circles questioned whether the Blood Ravens had been led astray by visions, or worse, arrogance. Boreale posthumously took much of the blame, rightly or wrongly, and among the Blood Ravens his name is remembered with a mix of respect and regret. The chapter's librarians wrote a confidential analysis of the campaign titled Debellis Kaurava. That is required reading for all Blood Raven officers now, a compilation of every error so that it may never be repeated. If there's a silver lining to Kaurava, it's that the chapter survived at all. Many chapters might have been completely wiped out in such a debacle. The Blood Ravens, scarred as they were, did not break. They licked their wounds, acknowledged their mistakes, and set about rebuilding with a humbler outlook. Steel Rain was quietly dropped from the playbook, except perhaps as a cautionary tale in the Codex supplement scribbled by some rueful Blood Raven strategist. Importantly, the survivors from Kaurava, those who led the remnants home, became fiercely determined to restore their chapter's honor. One of those survivors was Captain Apollo Diomedes, who had been away on a separate mission during the campaign. He returned to find half his chapter gone. Diomedes and others like him swore never to let such a tragedy befall the Blood Ravens again. Unfortunately, darker days were still ahead, and the next threat would come not from outside, but from within. Heresy from within. The fall of Azariah Kyrus. The greatest trial of the Blood Ravens, some would say their true test, came with the uncovering of monstrous heresy at the chapter's highest level. We've already seen hints. Chief Librarian Azariah Kyrus heroically helped save Aurelia from a demon in M40 and later became Chapter Master after the Kaurava disaster. But beneath that noble exterior, Kyrus had a secret. During that ritual to banish the daemon Ulkair on Aurelia long ago, Kyrus himself had been tainted. Over centuries, that taint grew into full-blown corruption. By the late 41st millennium, Chapter Master Kairos was a thrall of chaos, serving the dark gods in the shadows, even as he wore the mantle of an imperial hero. It's hard to overstate how catastrophic this was. A space marine. Chapter Master is one of the most trusted and powerful individuals in the Imperium, and Kairos had been pulling strings to undermine the Blood Ravens from within. Many of the tragedies that befell the chapter now took on a sinister light. Some suspect Kairos intentionally sent Boreale and half the chapter to die at Karava to eliminate those who were most loyal or incorruptible. He certainly had a hand in dispatching Davian Thule's forces to that deadly space hulk prior to the Tyranid invasion, an event where Thule was grievously wounded by a demon, conveniently thinning out more faithful marines. Slowly and methodically, Kairos was whittling down the Blood Ravens and grooming a coterie of secretly corrupted brothers, intending to eventually lead the entire chapter into the service of chaos. The hammer fell during what the Imperium catalogued as the Aurelia Secession. The Blood Ravens themselves call it the Third Aurelian Crusade. After Karava, as the chapter was still recuperating, Subsector Aurelia was struck by a Tyranid Hive Fleet splinter, Hive Fleet Leviathan's tendrils. The Blood Ravens, under Captain Davian Thule's coordination, fought a valiant defense against the Tyranids. They eventually halted the Xenos, though Captain Thule was mortally wounded, only saved by being interred as a dreadnought. The Tyranid War further weakened the chapter, leaving companies under strength and resources strained. It's in this precarious state that Kairos initiated his endgame. Corruption, seeded years before, began to bloom. A notable incident occurred on planet Meridian, an industrial world in Aurelia. Elements of the Blood Raven's Fourth Company were caught executing Imperial guardsmen and citizens under suspicion of heresy. But it turned out those Blood Ravens themselves were the ones tainted. Similar flare-ups of inexplicable atrocity by space marines happened on other planets. It became clear that a faction of the chapter had gone rogue. Confusion and distrust spread among the Blood Ravens still loyal, which is exactly what Kairos wanted. At this critical juncture, the long-absent Gabriel Angelos returned to the forefront. Sensing something was terribly wrong in his chapter, he defied Kairos's orders and began an independent investigation. With a little help from an Ordo Hereticus Inquisitor named Adrastia, what he uncovered was horrifying. Kairos was behind the rash of atrocities, using demonic influence to drive Blood Ravens to betray their oaths. Gabriel managed to convince several key Blood Ravens, including Captain Apollo Diomedes of the Honor Guard, of the Chapter Master's treachery. Once the scales fell from their eyes, those loyal to the Emperor rallied around Angelos to stop Kairos at all costs. What ensued was a civil war within the Blood Ravens. Brother fought brother across multiple worlds. Whole squads and companies turned to chaos under Kairos's command, forcing the loyalists to purge their own kin. It was brutal and heartbreaking. To their credit, the loyal Blood Ravens did not hesitate. They knew the price of failure would be the chapter's complete damnation, not to mention the devastation of the entire subsector. For Kairos's plans were leading to something truly apocalyptic. The climax came on the dead world of Aurelia itself, fittingly the chapter's old home, now a chaos-ridden wasteland after reappearing from the warp. Kairos, as part of his grand ritual, intended to offer up the entire sector to chaos, thereby ascending as a demon prince. The skies rained fire, demons poured forth, and amidst this hellscape the Blood Ravens fought their final battle of this insurrection. Gabriel Angelos, Chaplain Diomedes, and a handful of surviving loyalists launched a make-or-break assault on Kairos's stronghold. In the swirling melee, Kairos achieved his unholy transformation. He became a towering demon prince of Khorne, blood-mad and nearly invulnerable, many a brave battle brother fell trying to bring him down. In the end, the combined effort of the chapter's greatest heroes proved just enough. Librarian Jonah Orion, one of Gabriel's most trusted advisors, sacrificed himself to weaken Kairos with a colossal psychic blast. This gave Gabriel the opening to strike the demon prince with the God Splitter hammer. With a howling scream that echoed across reality, the demon that was Kairos toppled and was banished back to the warp, taking the former chapter master's corrupted soul with it. Just like that, it was over. The would-be arch-traitor of the Blood Ravens was dead. But victory felt like ash in the mouth. The chapter was devastated. The majority of its remaining first company, its veteran Terminators, had sided with Kairos and died or fled into the warp as renegades. Fully half of the remaining captains were either slain or revealed as heretics during the war. When the last bolt pistol was finally silenced, barely two companies worth of Blood Ravens were left standing, out of what had once been a full chapter. The toll of brother killing brother was soul-numbing. The aftermath brought the heavy hand of the Imperium's Inquisitors, an entire Space Marine chapter falling to chaos, even partially, is the exact sort of nightmare scenario the Inquisition exists to prevent. Inquisitor Drastia and the Grey Knights oversaw purges of any final traces of chaos taint among the Blood Ravens. Those few traitor Marines who survived and escaped went into hiding to be hunted later, and the chapter's fleet was scoured for heresy. The Blood Ravens, to their credit, cooperated fully. Those who remained were the true loyalists, with unwavering conviction. Gabriel Angelos was officially named Chapter Master. There was really no one else suitable left. Under his leadership, the survivors held fast to their chapter's continuity and refused the suggestion of disbandment. They performed penitent rites for the chapter's collective failure and swore mighty oaths of redemption. It is said that in the quiet of the ruined Aurelia Cathedral, Gabriel knelt and made a promise that the Blood Ravens would henceforth let no secret corrupt us and let no sacrifice be too great for purity. Practically, this meant the chapter implemented stricter screening of recruits, more frequent chaplain oversight of librarians, ironic for such a psyker-heavy chapter, but necessary given what happened, and an even deeper focus on controlling the knowledge they accumulate. If Kairos's heresy taught them anything, it's that unearned or unsafe knowledge, like chaos lore, must be kept on the tightest of leashes. The Imperium's authorities, noting the heroism of Angelus and his loyalists in averting an entire sector's doom, showed remarkable leniency. Rather than declare the chapter excommunicate traitorous, they allowed the Blood Ravens to repent and rebuild. Of course, a close eye remained on them. Several Inquisitors likely embedded agents around, just in case. But the Blood Ravens had survived the Crucible. They had stared into the abyss of chaos within themselves, and, by the Emperor's grace, had dragged themselves back out. Now the chapter was faced with a colossal task, rebuilding almost from scratch, again. At this point, it was the third time in a single century they'd had to replenish devastating losses, first Karava, then the Tyranids, now this. One could forgive them for feeling a bit cursed, yet the Blood Ravens are nothing if not tenacious. Gabriel Angelos, though aging, was unbroken in spirit. He began the slow process of recruiting and training new Blood Ravens, even as the galaxy around them descended into a new era of turmoil, reforged in the era Indomitus. After the nightmare of the Kairos heresy, the Blood Ravens entered the 42nd millennium, a shadow of their former selves. Gabriel Angelos, now Chapter Master, concentrated on nurturing new aspirants and safeguarding the chapter's remaining lineage. The Omnis Arcanum and a handful of strike cruisers served as their homes and training centers. Step by step, they clawed back some strength, taking on smaller-scale missions to hone their new recruits and reclaim lost honor. As if fate hadn't battered them enough, the next galactic crisis soon arrived. The events around the world of Acheron, depicted famously in the accounts of the Dawn of War III campaign. A mysterious warp-tainted world, Acheron emerged from the warp on a schedule and was said to house the Spear of Cain, an incredibly powerful Aeldari artifact. The Blood Ravens, true to form, could not ignore this convergence of knowledge and power. Though their resources were thin, Gabriel led a strike force to Acheron in hopes of securing the spear, or at least preventing it from falling into the wrong hands. On Acheron, the Blood Ravens encountered two old friends, Farseer Macha of the Eldar, still chasing that which might save or damn her people, and Warboss Gorguts of the Orcs, always chasing a good fight and loot. A three-way battle unfolded between Space Marines, Eldar, and Orcs, each faction maneuvering for the advantage. Despite their reduced state, the Blood Ravens fought with trademark tenacity and smarts. Gabriel personally performed a few heroic leaps of faith. The man jumped out of a Thunderhawk onto a moving Orc Gargant, if you can picture that. It looked like the Blood Ravens might actually seize the day and claim the Spear of Cain. However, the ever-pragmatic Inquisition had other plans. Deeming the spear too dangerous to exist, an inquisitorial fleet attempted an exterminatus on the vault where the artifact lay. The orbital bombardment they unleashed had unintended consequences. It cracked open the vault, and in doing so, released a captive greater demon of Khorne that had been bound beneath Acheron's surface. Suddenly, all factions on Acheron had a big, red, angry problem in common. A bloodthirster, one of Khorne's most fearsome greater demons, manifested, and reality started falling apart around it. What Gabriel Angelos did next bordered on legend and lunacy. Recognizing that the unleashed demon could slaughter everyone and then rampage off-world, he ordered one of the Blood Ravens' battle barges, the Dauntless, to crash directly into Acheron as a makeshift cyclonic warhead. Yes, a Space Marine battle barge, among the chapter's last and most precious capital ships. With the Inquisition's forces tying up the demon from orbit, and presumably saying, he's going to do what? The Dauntless's crew set a collision course. Gabriel and his men on the ground lured the bloodthirster toward a fault line, and at the opportune moment, the immense starship slammed into the planet. In the nick of time, the Blood Ravens teleporter units whisked Angelos and his team back to an evacuating strike cruiser. Acheron shattered under the impact. The Spear of Cain was obliterated, and the greater demon was dragged into the roaring furnace of the planet's destruction. When the dust and molten rock settled, Acheron was no more. It literally broke apart, but the demon threat was contained. The Blood Ravens had saved countless lives, at the cost of one of their two remaining battle barges and many brave crew. Gabriel Angelos, of course, survived. At this point, one might start to think the Emperor really has his hand on that one. The chapter chalked up another victory that nobody else could have achieved, and simultaneously another crippling loss to their assets. The joke in the aftermath was that Blood Ravens don't need enemies. Give them enough victories, and they'll whittle themselves down nicely. While the chapter was still reeling from Acheron, the galaxy plunged into the greatest upheaval since the heresy, the birth of the Cicatrix Maledictum. The Great Rift tore the Imperium in half and drowned whole sectors in warp storms. Subsector Aurelia was on the wrong side of the rift, Imperium Nihilus, meaning the Blood Ravens were cut off from Terra and most aid. For the already diminished chapter, it was yet another existential test. The Astronomican's light faltered, making warp travel hazardous. Communication with distant Imperial commands became sporadic or impossible. And worst of all, the rift's emergence triggered a surge of demonic and psychic phenomena in every system the Blood Ravens watched over. The decade or so following the Great Rift's appearance was incredibly dark, literally and figuratively, for the Blood Ravens. Many of their librarians, being highly psychic, suffered debilitating visions or burnout from the warp's turbulence. Some of the chapter's astropaths and navigator aides went mad or died. Chaos cults and demonic incursions erupted on worlds like Calderas and Meridian. The Blood Ravens, what few squads they had to spare, raced from fire to fire, trying to hold things together. Captain Gabriel, now more akin to a chapter master general, marshaling every resource, made the painful decision to divide his forces. Little strike teams of Blood Ravens spread out to respond wherever they could, even though it meant no single world had a full company defending it. A cruel irony. The chapter famed for foresight and planning was relegated to emergency reactive missions, often fighting with fragmentary intel under dire conditions. And yet they persevered. They bled for every city and colony they could reach. Truly, if the Blood Ravens had not been in Aurelia sector, it's likely the entire region would have fallen during this Noctis Eterna. At long last, salvation arrived in the form of the Indomitus Crusade, the grand imperial counteroffensive led by the resurrected Primarch Rabut Guilliman. A specially outfitted relief fleet, sometimes called a torchbearer fleet, pushed through the warp storms to find the scattered loyal forces in Imperium Nihilus. The Blood Raven's remnants, by sheer fortune, were discovered by this crusade arm. Led by a contingent of the Adeptus Custodes and Tech Priests of Mars, the relief force brought something the Blood Ravens desperately needed. Primaris Space Marines and the technology to create more. These new warriors, crafted from the Primarch's original gene stock and equipped with advanced arms, were a godsend to a chapter on the brink of extinction. Shield Captain Apollos Pertinax of the Custodes personally made contact with Captain, now acting Chapter Master, Atanaxis of the Blood, Raven's 7th Company. One can only imagine the morale boost when the Blood Ravens learned that the Imperium still stood and was fighting back, and that their beloved Primarch Guilliman had returned to lead. The Custodes bore a direct decree from Guilliman that the Blood Ravens were to receive full Primaris reinforcement and technology to rebuild. Overnight, the chapter's prospects changed. The tech priests helped the Blood Ravens establish new gene seed vaults and training programs for Primaris implantation. Phalanxes of fresh Primaris space marines, clad in the red and black of the chapter, bolstered the surviving companies. The Blood Ravens, true to their nature, did not just accept the gift blindly. Their apothecaries and librarians scrutinized the Primaris gene seed for any hints at their own mystery origins. If they gleaned any answers about their Primarch from the genetic data, outsiders have not been told. The Blood Ravens keep those findings close to the chest, possibly presenting only sanitized reports to the Custodes. There's an anecdote in chapter circles that Captain Atanaxis said, "Do not tell Chapter Master Angelos any of this until we have something solid," likely not wanting to burden Gabriel with wild speculation until evidence was in hand. Once integrated, the Primaris Marines proved their worth quickly. The reinforced Blood Ravens launched strikes to reclaim worlds lost in the recent chaos onslaught, coordinating with other Imperial forces pushing back the darkness. Gabriel Angelos, now confirmed as Chapter Master, continued to lead from the front, even as some urged him to take a step back and let the new generation carry the torch. Unsurprisingly, Angelos refused to sit idle. He promptly undertook the risky Rubicon Primaris surgery himself, emerging as a Primaris Space Marine so he could keep fighting alongside his brethren on equal footing. Thus, as the Indomitus Crusade stabilized the Imperium Nihilus, the Blood Ravens chapter was reborn in many ways. From a handful of tattered squads, they swelled back to a respectable force, not at full chapter strength yet, but no longer on the edge of oblivion. For the first time in a very long time, the Blood Ravens could think about the future in years and centuries again, not day-to-day survival. They still had their secrets and their scars, but they also had fresh blood, figuratively and literally, and a renewed mandate to serve the Imperium. The Primarch's secret lost sons, or something else. Through all their trials, one enigma remains unresolved, the Blood Raven's genetic lineage. With new Primaris gene seed samples to compare, and countless scraps of lore collected, have the Blood Ravens finally deciphered the puzzle of their origin? Officially, not yet. Unofficially, a mountain of clues has made one theory very hard to ignore, that the Blood Ravens may be descendants of the Thousand Sons, the traitor legion of Magnus the Red. It's a theory that once would have been heresy to even whisper, but let's lay out the evidence. First, there's the telltale similarity in heraldry and color. The Thousand Sons before their fall wore red armor with white accents, and one of their cults, the Corvidae, bore a raven's head symbol. The Blood Ravens wear red armor with bone-white accents and use a whole raven. Sure, many chapters have overlapping colors or symbols, but coupled with everything else, this raised eyebrows. Next, consider the extraordinary number of psykers in the Blood Ravens and their obsession with gathering knowledge. Among all space marines, who does that sound like? It sounds an awful lot like the Thousand Sons, who were renowned for their psychic prowess and thirst for understanding the mysteries of the universe, right up until those traits got them damned during the Horus Heresy. There are also direct lore hints scattered across historical texts. For instance, an old prophecy recorded by a psyker named Callista Iris on the eve of the burning of Prospero mentions the ravens, the lost sons, crying out for salvation and knowledge denied. At the time, no one knew what to make of that. In hindsight, it reads almost like someone foreseeing that a group of Thousand Sons, lost sons, would one day become the Blood Ravens, ravens crying out for knowledge. Spooky, isn't it? Then we have actual encounters between the Blood Ravens and Thousand Sons that tease at a connection. The most famous is Librarian Rama's misadventure. This Blood Raven got separated from his chapter around M41997, sucked into the warp, and ended up in the clutches of the Prodigal Sons, a war band led by none other than Asek Ahriman, the exiled chief librarian of the Thousand Sons, arguably one of the most knowledgeable and devious sorcerers alive. Instead of sacrificing Rama or turning him into a chaos spawn outright, Ahriman conversed with him. He referred to Rama as my lost brother, and even revealed that he had known Azariah Vidya. Yes, great father Vidya. Long ago, and better than you might expect. That implies Vidya himself might have been one of Ahriman's fellow Thousand Sons back in the Heresy era. Furthermore, Ahriman reminded Rama that the Thousand Sons Legion once wore red armor and bore a raven symbol, the Corvidae cult icon, and said pointedly, "We were not always so different, you and I." The meeting ended with Ahriman essentially helping Rama in pursuit of some knowledge naturally, and sending him on his way rather than killing him. Now, Ahriman is as manipulative as they come. His words can rarely be taken at face value. But it's hard to imagine a scenario where he'd bother to spin such a specific yarn unless there was something to it. Even the Blood Raven's own records grudgingly note the strange respect Ahriman showed to Rama. To top it off, recall that mysterious relics Thula found on Cronus and felt compelled to destroy? Many believe those were evidence of Blood Raven's being present, or rather the Thousand Suns being present, on that world 10,000 years ago. Perhaps survivors of Prospero's doom settled there with the help of Eldar. There were indications on Cronus of an ancient alliance between red-armored Astartes and Eldar to contain a great evil. Very similar to Tartarus's scenario, by the way. The pieces of the puzzle line up uncannily well. Within the chapter, it's said that the Secret Masters, that inner circle of senior librarians and commanders, have compiled all these clues and more. They likely have a strong hypothesis that their gene sire is Magnus the Red. If that is true, it presents a philosophical quandary. Their genetic father is a traitor Primarch, turned demon king of chaos, yet they themselves have remained loyal, Kyrus's little episode notwithstanding. The Blood Ravens have always felt a bit like outsiders among space marines. Now imagine learning you descend from a traitor legion. It would explain the erasure of their founding history. The Imperium would have hidden such a lineage, and the Inquisition's sealed records. It might even explain the curse of instability that has haunted them, a lot of their brethren falling to chaos, for instance, something the Thousand Suns gene line might be prone to due to the flesh change or other warp taints. To the Blood Ravens' enduring credit, even if tomorrow they confirmed, yes, our gene seed is from Magnus, it's hard to imagine them faltering in their duty. If anything, they might double down on proving that one's origins do not define one's destiny. In the vast lore of the Imperium, there are precedents for redemption and the Emperor's light coming to unexpected places. Perhaps the Blood Ravens are exactly that, the Emperor's redemption of a small part of Magnus's legacy, a band of his sons that continue to serve him, seeking knowledge to protect humanity rather than to damn it. As of now, however, the mystery isn't officially solved. The Blood Ravens keep seeking the truth, but they also seem content to live by their deeds rather than their pedigree. After all, if they announced publicly, "Hey, we're pretty sure we come from the Thousand Suns," it would invite all sorts of unwanted scrutiny, and possibly a bunch of zealots yelling, "Purge the witch!" So they guard this secret as zealously as any other, possibly waiting for a day when the knowledge can be used for the chapter's benefit rather than ruin. Conclusion: knowledge is power. In the unforgiving annals of the 41st millennium, and now the 42nd, the Blood Ravens have proven that knowledge can indeed be power. A power to defend, to destroy, or to corrupt, depending on how it's wielded. Their chapter saga is a tapestry of glorious victories interwoven with dire tragedies. They have stood against Xenos horrors, heretics, and even the darkness within their own ranks, and each time they have emerged, battered, but wiser. Few Space Marine chapters have been tested as relentlessly as the Blood Ravens, and fewer still have shown such a capacity to adapt, learn, and persevere. The Blood Ravens exemplify the maxim that understanding the enemy is key to victory, but they also serve as a cautionary tale. Delving too deep into forbidden lore can exact a terrible price. They walk a knife's edge between enlightenment and oblivion, and yet they endure. Today, the Blood Ravens fight on as a renewed but chastened chapter. They are smaller than they once were, and every battle brother among them is all the more precious. Under Gabriel Angelos's watchful leadership, they balance on that knife's edge, wielding the Emperor's fury in one hand and safeguarding ancient wisdom in the other. Their motto, "Knowledge is power, guard it well," rings out not just as a battle cry, but as a guiding principle by which they navigate the perilous currents of fate. The legacy of the Blood Ravens is one of resilience and relentless pursuit of truth. They have been called thieves by some, heroes by others. Perhaps they are a bit of both. They will appropriate a relic or two if it means strengthening the Imperium, and they'll certainly appropriate a good idea or strategy if it leads to victory. They've also shown an almost unparalleled willingness to sacrifice, be it annihilating their own homeworld, scuttling their own starship, or facing down their own gene kin gone bad, all to protect humanity from worse outcomes. In a way, the Blood Ravens have lived out the ultimate message of the Emperor, that one must suffer, not the witch slash heretic slash alien to live, even if the witch is your brother, even if the heresy lies in your own heart. It's a harsh lesson, but they have learned it through blood and fire. In the grim darkness of the far future, where ignorance often feels safer than knowledge, the Blood Ravens choose a different path. They dare to know, to understand, and to use that understanding in the Emperor's service. It sets them apart, for better or worse, from many of their cousin chapters. Is it risky? Absolutely. But in a galaxy of endless war and insidious threats, someone has to be the lorekeeper, the detective, the one who asks why when everyone else only cares about who do I shoot. The Blood Ravens will be those ones, and if they sometimes pay a heavier price for it, they accept that as the cost of guarding the Imperium's soul. As we conclude this chronicle of the Blood Ravens, one thing is certain: their story is far from over. New wars will come, new secrets will beckon, and the Blood Ravens will be there. Part scholars, part warriors, and wholly devoted to the Emperor. They will keep seeking the truth no matter how dangerous, and they will keep fighting no matter how hard the road. Because in the end, knowledge is power, and the Blood Ravens will forever guard it well. And if you notice a missing artifact or two after they visit, well, consider it under better protection than it was before.